Good evening. Greet you all in the name of Jesus. Greetings from Sharon tonight. That's where we go to church. Jared asked me to come share some on missions. We did have the privilege of serving for 2 years in Haiti. We went down to Haiti in 2011, June of 2011, and we came back July, I guess it was, of 2013. How many of you ever been to Haiti? I know some. Okay. A little bit about Haiti. You can't see real good, but I did print a little map out, but it shares an island with the Dominican Republic, and Haiti's about one third of the island on the western side. And there's the vision of boot. There's a long finger sticks out to the west. And Port-au-Prince is right in the corner here. And then there's a finger sticks out here. But Haiti is about the size. It's just a little bit smaller than the state of Maryland. And it has a population is a little over 10 million. Now, when you compare that, the amount of people to what Maryland has, Maryland is about 6 million. So it's a little bit smaller of area, and it has a lot more people. People everywhere in Haiti. If you've been there, you know what I mean. But anyways, as far as religions in Haiti, probably the majority, the biggest religion that's there is Roman Catholic, just a little over 50%. But the actual official religion of the country is voodoo. We did run into some evil spirit, people overcome with evil spirits and things like that. And that was an eye opener, but enough about that. And I do want to give time for questions and answers, or, you know, let's just be open if you have any questions. There's a lot of things I could maybe say, and I'm not sure. I was reminiscing today and this afternoon, sitting there and trying to figure out what all to talk about. But we were asked whether we would ever consider serving in the mission field. That was Caleb is on the board for SLM Ministries. It's Sunlight Mission. And he had asked us in September of 2010. And so we had gave that yes that we would. And so it was actually June then in 2011 till we moved. But it was quite an adventure. It was a preparation, preparing the mind, we sold everything and went. I was really a trying time for me, having that faith in God, you know, just trusting the Lord. There were times of doubt, is this really what we should be doing? But as time went on, God showed me clearly that it was His call. And I had no doubt when we went that it was the call of God on our lives. And that meant something to me. One of the things as we were preparing to go, we already gave our answer. And it was like April of 2011. It was just a couple months before we were moving. And we got word that Kevin Hoover, that's a family that was living down there, Kevin and Jolene Hoover, their son had been kidnapped. And they were serving with the mission where we were going. And that was a trying time for me, too. It kind of threw me for a loop. But we trusted the Lord, and we went. Neither of us had never been there before, so it was quite an adventure. We had five children. The oldest was 11, and the youngest was 4. So we had quite a adventure getting to Haiti. Nobody went with us. We went by ourselves. All we had was stories and pictures, and we had 11 check-in suitcases and a bunch of carry-ons. Everything was, we had everything. And when we got to the airport in Haiti, it was like, man, nervous. Heard stories, they want to grab your stuff. They want to, you know, I had my laptop along, and nobody was getting that. I had that strapped around my shoulder, but it wasn't quite as bad as what, I mean, the people did want to help for sure, but we made it through and didn't know the language. It's a different language. They speak, the Creole is the dominant language down there, and also some French, but Creole is a form of French. And so as we got there, our ultimate goal was to, what we were going for was to live in the country, what we called it, which was, if you out the finger, about halfway out that finger that I talked about was a mission house. About halfway out the finger out here. From Port-au-Prince, it's about 70 to 75 miles. And we usually figured it took 3 hours to drive there. But that's where we were headed. But the first 2 months, we lived in the city, just across from the guest house. And they were, one of the natives started giving us language classes. And so we did some of that. And then for the first month and, well, first 2 months. But in July of that first year, Kevin's came home for furlough. And so we watched over the guest house while they were gone. So that was our second month in Haiti, and we were kind of there by ourselves. So that was a little bit. But anyways, then when Kevin's came back, beginning of August, we moved out to the country, which was our destination. And so we were excited about that. And nobody had lived in this house for, I forget, it was a number of years. So we did have some preparing, just getting things ready, cleaning. I mean, it was very dirty, and it took some work. And so that's where we wound up. A little bit about the mission. Sunlight Missions, they have, there's 7 churches that they support in Haiti. And I think like 6 of those churches have schools that go with them. And these schools could be anywhere from 300 to 400 some children at these schools at one time. And they usually provide a meal a day for the children. And so we aided them as a mission monetarily, and also helped them, like once a month I would go and buy school food, bulk sacks of rice and beans and things like that. And then once a day they would make a meal for the children when they came to school. And for some of the children, that was the only right meal they got all day. So I think it was a pretty good thing to do. So my responsibility, what was my responsibility? Well, the first year we were there, once we finally got to Kaijak, my goal was to, of the 7 churches that SOM supported, 6 of those churches are pretty much surrounding our area there in Kaijak. There was only 1 church in the city, which was a distance away. All the rest were out in the country. And so it really was a need there for somebody to live there in the house where we were. And so my responsibility basically was to live there, represent the mission, work with the church pastors, building relationships, helping the schools, as talked about, buying food once a month, giving monetary support once a month. There was building maintenance, there was addition projects going on, there was, while I was there, there were some new church buildings being going up, and so I got involved with some of that. About a month after we moved into our house, we started a addition on the house project, because we were trying to make it suitable for us to live there with, and have a school teacher live there with us, so we built another bedroom and bathroom on the back of the house and made the porch bigger that we actually used for a schoolroom then. So that was kind of interesting, because I really didn't know the language yet, and Haitians were the ones that were building the house. So when the fellow would try to talk to me, I didn't understand what he's saying. So I would call Kevin on the phone and say, hey, can you talk to him? I don't know what he's saying. So he would talk to him and he would try to tell me what. So it was kind of a, and you learn to use hand signals, and usually you somehow get the word across. I usually wound up preaching about twice a month. They wanted me to make up a schedule because they wanted me to try to get around to the different churches out there. And so once a month I'd try to get to one of those churches up in the mountains. I mean, it could have been a half hour to an hour drive from where we lived. Dirt roads up in the mountains. There was numerous ones we were at, and I kind of enjoyed that. And usually, one of the things Americans down there, they did treat you well. They usually tried to treat you with their best. I mean, when we'd go to a different church like that, usually they would make a meal for us, and so it was a lot of good memories. The town where we lived was Kaijak, and right in our house there was there was a school and a mission, all kind of in that compound. So that was kind of our home church there in Kaijak. I liked, you know, I was reminiscing today, and I liked our little country home there in Kaijak. We did a bunch of things to it. We kind of got the house in shape. We painted. We did a little landscaping. We did some upgrades to the house. Kind of made it sort of neat in its own little way, living there in the country in Kaijak. And, you know, I had many good times. I had many good times there. You know, I was reminiscing today, thinking about, you know, personal times with God, just sitting there on our front porch, in the back porch, spending time alone with God. And it, like, oftentimes in the mornings, you know, studying scripture, preparing messages, you know, listening to those morning sounds. It was just wonderful times that I thought about there that we had. And sometimes maybe it was more in the evenings, but you know, I could sit there from my house, being the church and the school were right there. There was a group of missionary ladies. They called themselves a ladies missionary group. And they would get together and they would practice singing. And they could really sing. And Haitians sing loud, and they put their all into it. And many people say that when they go down and they hear them. That's one thing that stands out to them, as they're singing. But this group of ladies, they would practice singing, and then they would, every once in a while, they would go out maybe into another community and sing, you know, for people, kind of as a missionary type thing. And so they would get together and they would practice singing, and, you know, I could hear them from the house, and it was just neat to sit there and listen to that. Just good memories. You know, but it wasn't all easy times either. We had times of struggles. I know that one point there, Sandra and I were at the point where probably a few months after we were there, we were like, what are we doing here? Jim, you've been on the mission field for a very long time. You've probably been through some of the same stuff. You know, why aren't we back in America where we can understand people and where we can, couldn't we help people better if we were back in a land where we understand and know? And that was just some of the things. One of the first year we lived in Kaijak, then just before we came home on furlough after our first year, the mission board asked us whether we would consider living in the guest house in the city and take over, because Kevin's were planning to come home and serve as administrator, which meant they didn't have anybody for Kevin's. And I said, well, we would be willing to fill in for a time to give them time to find somebody. And so when we came back from furlough, we lived at the guest house. But now we were planning to move back to Kaijak if we could, So we had things at that house, and we had things at this house, and this is 70, 75 miles apart, and we had 3 hours, basically, of difference between the two. So we would, now I was involved with things out here, and it was a little difficult, because now I had to get involved in things in here, and there's things going out here, and so we would travel out there, and then when we went out there, we would stay for a couple days, usually, and it was kind of our house. But, so, they never did get anybody to replace Kevin's, and so we wound up living there that whole second year. And I would say this, if I were to go back to Haiti, I would want to go back to the house where we originally were. I just kind of enjoyed it out there. It's more, one of the differences is, in the city you have, it's the walls. You are basically kept inside these walls, separate. They have to come and bang on the door or the gate, and you have to let them in, the Haitians, to even get to your house. So you kind of, in a way, you're separated, but you almost need that because of the way Haiti is and living in the city. But out in the country, the Haitians, they could come right up to our gate at our garage. And so in a sense, I felt safer out there too. I mean, we didn't really worry about our children too much. I mean, we could go out of the compound and walk the trails over to the neighbors. And it was just easier to get involved with the natives and learn to know your neighbors and things like that. But it also did create a little bit of a challenge because the natives, they could come up to your garage and they could stand there and just look in the garage and just watch you. And that got a little annoying sometimes because it's like, I mean, we're not used to that. Us Americans aren't used to that. But as we lived there in Kaijak our first year, and we met neighbors and friends, and we made friends, and we learned to know different people, and it was good. It was, I learned to know people. There's people living there in Haiti who they try their best to do what's right, and I feel they're, you know, they're Christians. They're living there, they're serving the Lord. And one young man I learned to know, his name was Eli. In English it'd be Eli, and Creole they would say Ailey. He was a very poor man. He was never married, but he was living together with a woman and had a child with her. And I kind of hired him. He started helping me. We were doing some welding at our house, and then this turned into something. I started doing a little bit of welding, and I hired him to help me. And then the neighbors would start bringing their wheelbarrows and their old. You couldn't even hardly weld the things anymore. They were so rusted and broken. And it's like, you know what? You can't even hardly fix it. Irons. They use irons that are like sort of like cast iron, and they put hot coals in them inside. The handle flips up, and they put hot coals inside, and that's how they use irons. They use metal things they sit on the ground to put hot coals in to cook off of. They're made out of like metal rods, rebar. They'd bring them, whatever. We kind of started something, and I kind of hired him, and I started charging the people a little to get work done, because otherwise this could become a nightmare. And anyways, I learned to know him, and I started talking to him about his spiritual life, and he knew he was living in sin, and you know, but down in Haiti, it seems these people, within their culture, they feel like they can't get married unless they have a house. Because if they get married and don't have a house, the people are going to make fun of them. And I don't know what it was like in Grenada, Jim, but that's a lot of the people, that's how they think down there. And so, but I was after him about, he needs to get married. And he did start coming to church some. He just, it just didn't change. He just couldn't get we just couldn't get the change, it seemed like. And finally one day he went with me to market one day, and I as we were leaving to come back home from market, I just simply said to him, I said, if we have an accident on the way home, and I said, you die, I said, where are you going? Well, he said, I'm going to pray God that we don't have an accident. You know, so he knew, and actually it was just we were down in April again on a family trip, and I met him again, and he wanted to take me over and show me, he started building a house, but of course he don't have enough funds to finish. He got a little bit of money from doing some work, and he started building a house. And so I said to him, I said, now, wouldn't have it been better? To me, I mean, the priority is a little mixed up. I said, wouldn't have it been better to use that money to get married instead of starting to build a house, and now he's out of money? Now, he's still not, but, and then, yeah, he said, well, the people make fun of me if I get married and don't have a house. And so there's just things like that that are roadblocks as you try to help people. And then one day, this fellow had a friend that lived over in his area that had a little boy, and they came by one day, and this little boy got his finger in a bicycle wheel, and his finger was broke, and they wondered if I could take him to the hospital. All right, sure. And so we did. And I'm wondering, man, how are they going to have money to pay for this? Of course, they went in the hospital, they came out, they were supposed to buy some medicine, they didn't have no money. Okay, so I'm supposed to probably help them. So I helped them, and then eventually the boy, he got his finger. I don't know if it ever actually healed correctly, but anyways, there were times I felt like I was being taken advantage of. People would come to our gate and they would ask for many, many things, from tools to money to food to sugar, I mean, all kinds of stuff. We had canned meat, you know, from Cam that we used, and asked for meat. They asked for, one day even had somebody ask for if they could use our hair clippers. You know, and it just, I struggled with some of that because it started to wear me down, because I was struggled with knowing how to handle some of that. And then sometimes I felt like I was taken advantage of, like they would ask me to do something and then kind of put me on a spot where, oh, okay, so now I brought you to the hospital, but you don't have any money. So now what? And then one day, I had the yard man there where we lived in Kaijak, he wanted me to take his son to the hospital because he was sick. And I'm thinking, wow, how's he gonna pay for this? And I asked him how he's gonna pay for it. I mean, if he has money or how's he gonna, he said, well, God's gonna take care of it. Okay, all right. So I decided I'm gonna talk to the pastor. Different times I would run things by all these churches out in the country where I lived, these six churches, they all had Haitian pastors. And so that was nice because I could run things off of them. You know, if somebody came and asked me for things, I would say, you know what? Did you talk to Pastor Paul about that? Oh, no, I'm not gonna talk to Pastor Paul. Well, why not? You know, so that was one way to help me determine if this was really, really a need. But so I decided I'm going to talk to Pastor Paul about this. And I talked to him, and I told him the situation. He wants me to take him to the hospital. And I said, I'm wondering how he's going to pay for it. And he said, God's going to pay for it. And then Pastor Paul, he's just like, I just said, are you God? And I said, no. So it was kind of humorous, but he knew what I was struggling with a little bit. So, as I said, some of these things started to wear on me, and I think I started to lose my compassion for the people and for the work. I understand why. I mean, furloughs are good. You need to have a break. You need to be able to get away. And I started to struggle with some of that. But then the scripture spoke to me as I studied for a message to preach as we came home on furlough. And as I was searching for a message, God spoke to my heart. If you have your Bibles, why don't you flip to Matthew chapter 9 and just share a little bit on that. I preached a message when I came home. It was titled Compassion for the Christian, and it really actually stemmed from a struggle I was going through. When I studied these scriptures and I studied the life of Jesus, it really spoke to me. Because Jesus is our ultimate example of compassion. If you look in verse 35 there in Matthew chapter 9, it tells us that, "And Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing every sickness and every disease among the people." Verse 36, "But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd." The province of Galilee was 40 miles long, 25 miles wide, and supposedly had like 204 cities and villages. Now it tells us that Jesus went about all the cities and villages teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel, healing every sickness and every disease among the people. I wonder, do you think Jesus ever got weary? Do you ever think he felt overwhelmed? He was busy. All these people, many, many people. But in verse 36, it tells us, "But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them." Why? Because they fainted and they were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. These people needed a shepherd. They needed somebody to lead them and to guide them and to show them the way. And Jesus, he had compassion on them. So I just thought I'd share a little bit of that. As far as our second year of term, we came back from furlough and then we started living in the guest house. Things were a little bit different there. Every Thursday afternoon, we'd have the neighbor children, the young children come for like maybe an hour or two to have to play in our compound there for a little, and then we'd have a Bible story. So we did some of that. We started Friday evenings. We would have the older boys come and play some basketball and try to have a little bit of Bible study with them. So there were some things we did there. And then I also got involved with the church in the city, Santo Church, and the school there as well. That school was run a little bit different, but and then I was administrator, so that meant I made numerous trips to the bank, and that was probably one of the jobs I liked or disliked the most, because the mission would wire funds down to Haiti, and we went through a lot of money. And so we would have to go into the bank and pull out cash because they really didn't have, you couldn't really use checks because a lot of people didn't even take checks. But that's changed now some, so they are able to use some checks. But we used basically all cash when I lived there. And so I would go into the bank and we went through maybe $10,000 a month down there, American, U.S. funds. So I would pull out, I could only pull out so much, but I would maybe pull out $8,000 or $9,000 U.S. and I'd exchange the majority of it into Haitian money right away. And I would have stacks of cash. Because the Haitian money, when I lived down there, was like 40 to 42 goods per dollar. And their money is in goods, so, you know, if you had 8,000 US, you had 320,000 goods. And the biggest bills in goods were 1,000. So I would get stacks of cash and I would stuff them in my socks, under my pant legs, on both feet, both legs, and because I didn't want to come walking out of the bank carrying any bag. It looks like it might have cash, so I tried to hide it. And sometimes in the bank, we'd go into a little case, they called it, which is darkened, blackened, more of a room where the general public can't really see you. But it's still in Haiti, you stick out like a sore thumb with being a white man. So going into the bank and coming out, it wasn't the greatest thing to do, but God protected us. And sometimes when we go to the bank, we try to go on different days, maybe take a different vehicle, maybe go to a different bank, try not to make any pattern. There's things we thought about, you know, while we were there. And I changed banks while we were there, went to a different one, and, you know, there was just different things like that. Kevin taught me, don't leave a pattern. And while we were living there, that second year, I think it was in about September of that year, Blue Ridge Mission, which is just a few blocks up in Santo from where the guest house was in where we were living, one of their missionaries that lived there, they followed him home from the bank, and they had a trap set up for him. And just as he was to go into his compound, there were some guys came out with guns, and they actually shot at him. Everything. God protected him, and they didn't get anything. But it seriously can happen down there. So you wanted to be careful. As far as being robbed or anything like that, we didn't really have any problem. I did a couple times as we were driving. The traffic moves slow because it's traffic bumper to bumper, and you're slow, especially in the city. You would be going slow enough that somebody could jump on the back of your pickup. And there was a couple times I had somebody on the back trying to take something, and I don't think they ever got off with anything. I seen them in time, or I stopped, and they're gone. But we were fortunate that way. What did we learn? What did we learn while living in Haiti? I tried to make a list of things that I thought maybe could share what we learned by living in Haiti. Those of you involved with missions would probably agree that one of the greatest challenges of missions is mission personnel. That's going to be some of the greatest challenges. Not having enough of staff to share the workload, and B, relationship struggles between the personnel that are on the field. And I think some of that, it comes from living in close quarters together. You know, you bring somebody into your home, so to speak, to live with you that's not part of your family, it can create challenges. And so that's one thing, for whatever it's worth. Another thing is, I think we American Mennonites tend to create or have our own type of, our own culture, so to speak. One of the things that Brother Jim, he gave me some advice before we moved to Haiti. And he told me, he said, if I can give you any advice, he said, go with an open mind. And that's very good advice. Because first of all, when I moved to Haiti, I kind of had to know it all. Why don't you do it like this? Or why don't you should do it like this or like that? But that seemed to change, you know, the longer we lived there, that seemed to change. Caused me to do some thinking about how we do things. You know, well, or how we do things, are we doing it? I mean, are we really doing things the right way? You know, there's, on some things, there's more than one way to do things. just because I do things a certain way or we do things a certain way doesn't necessarily mean that that's the only way or the best way. We can learn things from them. We can learn from each other. Living in another culture tends to broaden our minds and to other ways. You know, broadens our minds to think about other ways of doing things or other ideas. Another thing, we Americans live with lots more than we would need. I will say that. And I think it seems like at times we're too busy. That's a challenge. I think I'm still trying to figure that out. I moved back to America again, and I'm still trying to figure out that balance. I don't know. Haitians value relationships, and they love when you take the time to talk to them and to just talk and visit with them. Visiting with people is important. That's important to them. And I'm afraid a lot of us people here would be almost too busy for them to take the time like they would value to talk. There's times when one of the neighbors would come to talk to me there at Kaijak, and I would be like, man, I was planning to get this done. And I was like, well, man, is he going to talk all day? But sometimes I would, you know, well, I need to get going, you know, I have something to do or whatever. But another thing is, even the small things in life that we enjoy here are a blessing. What I mean by that is, when we moved to Haiti, we didn't have Diefenbach's potato chips. We didn't have Dutch Way's Turkey Hill ice cream. You know, little things like that, Mountain Dew, that we enjoyed by living here. We didn't have that, and it wasn't a problem. But people would send us suitcases sometimes. Somebody would be coming down, they'd send a suitcase with them. And we'd open the suitcase up, and it'd be like Christmas in August or September. Wow, bags of chips and candy, and you know, it was exciting. It was neat. So if you want to bless you, I've seen you have people out on the mission field, wherever they are, send them stuff. That's stuff they enjoy. Another thing is, down in Haiti, they don't have the resources like we do. And one of the things that I took a personal interest in when I was living there is helping some of the people I knew that were somewhat trustworthy to start a little business, loan them a little money, start selling this or start doing this. Or I tried to help people that way, because without resources, we can't hardly get anywhere in life. And that's kind of where they find themselves. There's many Haitian people who would love to have a job. So when you go to work tomorrow, just enjoy your job. Just be thankful you have a job. There's many people in Haiti who would love to have a job and provide for and support their family, but they don't have the resources. You know, we grow up here in Myerstown or wherever we are, many of us, our fathers have businesses, or there's Mennonite business. It's easy for us to get a job. You get a job when you're 15. I started working at Farm Boy when I was 15. I went in one day, I wanted to get a job and start making some money. And my dad took me in, and I started the next day. Didn't even fill out an application, just started working. $5 an hour. But they don't, you know, they would love to have a job. And there were times when I try to hire them to do a job. We try to help them in that way. I mean, and there's some of those people down there who would work hard. I think the mentality with some people here in America is, oh, those people are lazy down here. They're, you know, well, there's lazy Americans. There are lazy people, but there's good people too. There's people who work hard. They'd put Americans to shame. I hired, when we lived in Kaijak, we built a new septic tank. We didn't get a permit. But anyways, that was a 9x9 hole, 9x9 square, about 8 to 10 foot deep. And I hired 3 Haitians. They dug that by hand with shovels and a pickaxe. And they were dying. They'd keep getting deeper, and the dirt would come flying up out of the hole. I think it took them, I don't remember, a week, 2 weeks maybe, a week or two to dig that. And then we fed them while they worked, and I paid them to do it, but they worked hard. They didn't get no backhoe. I see my time's starting to run out here. Does anybody have any questions?
How hard was it to adapt to their diet?
To their diet? Very easy. We loved their food. Actually, our family was, we weren't too sure how that was gonna be because we're kind of picky eaters. And we went to Haiti and we got to the point where we were almost fighting over their food. We loved it. Beans and rice one day, rice and beans the other day. No, it wasn't quite that bad, but chicken is a big thing down there. They have pork, they do beef, but rice and beans, very heavy. And then they make a sauce you can put on top, which it could be a vegetable sauce or a meat sauce. Put your rice and beans and they put the sauce on top. And they make some other frittai, we called it. There's like bonbons and they make, yeah, different things. They fry in oil and it's really good. Most of the food we liked. Anyone else? Maybe I'll share a little story. Jim was down with the seniors from Lebanon Valley when we lived there in Kaijak. And we enjoyed having them there. And they were there during rah-rah season, which is kind of a evil worship stuff going on, but I don't think it really was a rah-rah that time. Were you in May? You would have been in May. I think it might have been after rah-rah. I think there was a protest going on, what that was, but there was men. We were leaving to go back into the city, and some men were coming down the road. They were protesting, sort of rioting. There was rocks on the road. There was And right where we wanted to pull onto the road, this group of people came, and some of the Haitians were telling us, you know, turn around, turn around. And these people were carrying bottles, and Jim has a vivid picture. I just talked to Jim a little bit before church, and he said he has a vivid picture of that in his mind because we didn't know what was going to happen. But what happened? Did somebody left us through then, I think, or?
Yeah.
Yeah. One time I did get into a protest, and I was scared. My parents came down to visit, and I don't remember. But anyways, it was maybe February or so of 2013, maybe the last year we were there, I believe it was. And we were on our way out to the country, and we were cruising along, and the traffic went over to the other side of the road, which wasn't a real big deal. Okay, must be going around something. And we went over, and oh, there's people marching up the road. Oh, gobs of people. And okay, well then, let's get back over. But you couldn't, because there was people coming the other way. They were like blocking the whole road. There's a whole group of people coming up the road. And it was something to do with the president or whatever. And we were stuck right there. And the people started, I mean, they were coming up through, and so they were just swarming around our truck. And I told my dad was sitting in the front with me, and I think my mom and Sandra, and I said, close the windows and lock the doors. Okay, so I was shaking until I got out of there. I started praying, and people would walk by the truck, and they would wham on the side of the truck, and wham. And then finally, all of a sudden, there was a fella in front of me, and he got the people to the side, and he said, come on, and he kind of brought us through the people, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen. We had people on the back, too, but And there again, God protect us. And God is faithful. God is good. Does anybody have any questions? Or is my time up? Okay. Do you have any more questions before I... All right, well, thank you for listening. Hopefully, you can take some of what I shared and use it as a blessing.